Tuesday, June 3rd. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. Hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. You mentioned it's June 3rd, June 10th, a week from today. Very big day in New Jersey.
Yes, that's New Jersey's primary day. And New Jersey's gubernatorial race, well, it is gearing up to becoming one of the most expensive and most unpredictable in state history. There are six Democrats and five Republicans vying to become the Garden State's next governor.
That's a lot of viers.
Yeah, a lot of viers. So many candidates, so many TV ads. They're everywhere. It's hard to keep it all straight. But this election is also a first. It's the first election without that traditional party favorite county line, which gave party favorites an advantage. That could shake up the outcome. Plus, there are some big issues at stake in New Jersey, like affordability. Everybody's been complaining about the taxes and affordable housing. There's education, immigration, and economy. And also, President Donald Trump. Is he going to be a bonus to the candidates? Is he going to be a burden to the candidates?
I like that. Bonus or burden. Well done.
Yes.
Alliteration.
Thank you. I try, Avi Wolfman-Arendt. but we're going to break it all down. We have two guests are going to talk about the candidates, the issues, the stakes. And our question of the day is this. Which candidate for New Jersey governor do you support? And also tell us why. And what is the most pressing issue you see that is facing the next governor? You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, hello. Be sure to leave those questions, comments, all of that in the live chat.
And just in case you were wondering, there is a Bruce Springsteen-based controversy in this particular New Jersey governor's race. Never change, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Never change. We never change. We always start with a trio of local news stories. And for the first one, we're going to tell you about a different governor's race, the one coming up in 2026 for Pennsylvania's governor. Of course, Josh Shapiro expected to run for re-election. He's the current governor. Republicans are gearing up to challenge him, and among Republicans, Cherry, there might be a new front runner. You might have missed this. On Friday, Donald Trump stopped in western Pennsylvania mostly to talk about steel tariffs, but during his remarks, he mentioned that he would support U.S. Congressman Dan Muser if Muser decides to run for governor, and it sure looks like Muser is going to run. He's based out of Northeast PA. He's a U.S. rep, but he has been crisscrossing the state, seemingly gearing up for a gubernatorial run. What Trump said was not an official endorsement, but it sure looks like a huge blow to the other major GOP contenders who were considering bids. That includes Treasurer Stacey Garrity and 2022 GOP nominee Doug Mastriano. So Muser seems to have the inside track for the Trump endorsement, and that's a huge deal.
That is. And interesting to see if this preemptive endorsement will clear the field. Everybody just kind of backs down. Also, I have to say, I had never heard of Muser. And I'm sure there are folks in this part of the Commonwealth that had never heard of him. And so it sort of raised his profile, I think, to get name dropped by President Donald Trump.
In a part of the state that he's not even from, by
exactly.
the way.
Exactly. Yeah, he's from Northeast. Also, one of the things that this article said is that he believes that Pennsylvania should enact policies modeled after Texas, Florida, Utah, Georgia, and Indiana. So folks are probably going to start looking at his policies, like what he actually believes now. But it won't be an easy road. I mean, think about it. I mean, Josh Shapiro, our current governor, very popular.
With huge name recognition.
Yeah, huge name recognition, well-respected by Republicans and Democrats. And plus, I mean, if you think about the governor's race in Pennsylvania, I mean, I've been here, 15, 16 years. We only had one Republican governor, Tom Corbett. And, you know, the Democrats have been sort of had the momentum when it comes to that statewide race.
That specific race, for sure. You mentioned that clear the field effect. That's a really interesting insight because this was already going to be, like you mentioned, kind of a tough road for for whoever wins the nomination. Now, if you're a Stacey Garrity or a Doug Mastriano, you're looking at it like, I probably don't have the Trump endorsement just to get to the final. And then the final was already going to be tough. I don't know. Maybe I pack it in and wait for the next one. But we don't know. I mean, there's a lot left up in the air here. Speaking of things that are very, very confusing, story number two, Jen.
Yeah, there is a lot of confusion and questions being asked after the Trump administration removed the list. It recently published that identified all of the so-called sanctuary jurisdictions across the country to be targeted by Homeland Security. Of course, Philly was on that list, as well as four other cities in Pennsylvania and more than a dozen counties. New Jersey and Delaware, both self-identified sanctuary states, also on the list. The problem was that on that list included three GOP-controlled Pennsylvania counties that were very pro-Trump.
Yeah.
Where Trump won literally by like 20 points. And, you know, they would have never passed sanctuary city policies. One example is Clarion County, which declared itself a Second Amendment sanctuary county back in 2021.
Which might be why it got flagged.
Yeah, because they used the word sanctuary.
Doing like a control F search, basically, for sanctuary.
And that's a red flag right there, yeah. on many levels. So all of this raised questions. A conservative-leaning National Sheriff's Association criticized that list. Then all of a sudden, the list disappeared. It's no longer on the website. It says nothing, you know, no longer found,
yeah. 404 error, whatever it is.
And so the Department of Homeland Security issued a statement Monday that said, quote, the list is being constantly reviewed and can be changed at any time and will be updated regularly. So, and of course, all of this came in response to a presidential executive order that directed the Office of Homeland Security to sort of create this list, to send letters to these sanctuary jurisdictions, and then to possibly even pull their funding. So yeah. This has sort of been a snowball effect.
And Philadelphia, by the way, is not even calling itself a sanctuary city anymore. They're now a welcoming city. So they're going to have to do a control F for welcoming next time. There's probably welcoming in all sorts of policies.
Look, sanctuary, yeah. The word sanctuary is toxic right now. You don't use that term.
Yeah. Well, sounds like DHS is in a bit of a pickle.
Mm-hmm.
Transitioning to our third story.
Oh, that was good, Avi. Yeah,
it was okay.
Aaron's.
It was okay.
Yes.
So question for you, Cherry.
Yes.
Would you rent clothing from a stranger? Well, if you answered yes, I have an app for you.
Ooh, okay.
It
lay
is
it
called
out.
Pickle, co-founded by a recent Penn grad named Julia O'Mara. The concept seems pretty simple. Users post clothing and accessories that they're willing to rent. And if people like the item and the price, they rent it. And then they eventually return it. It is being called the Airbnb of fashion. And it recently raised $12 million. O'Mara sat down with the Inky recently to talk about the idea. I do think calling yourself the Airbnb of X is a great way to raise money. Generally, our executive producer, Kevin McCoy, pointed that out. I agree with him. But bottom line, it's an interesting idea. Renting clothing from a stranger, but would you do it?
Well, I have on a rented denim dress today from Rent the Runway. So I do believe in renting clothing just because I love fashion, but I don't want to spend all my money on fashion.
Okay.
But the thing that, you know, I get nervous about is who are these people you're renting, you know, the clothes from?
They're randos on the internet.
Randos on the internet. Exactly. And this is a very intimate thing. The clothing is going to touch your skin. You don't know if they actually clean the clothing. Sometimes even when
you got this from Rent the Runway.
Yeah. And they usually they have really strict policies about cleaning the products. But I have gotten dresses that were a little funky.
Wait, they smell bad?
They smell bad and you report it to them. Yeah. And but, you know, if you're randos on the internet, I mean, you
so you
stuff.
Trust these Rent the Runway guys over your fellow citizens?
Yeah, because there's at least a standard, right?
Okay.
So, but you know.
Well, the idea is that you could give the person a bad review if they rent you some funky
clothing.
Yeah,
that's supposed to keep people honest.
And if you return it funky, to use your
you
word,
you
get a bad review, right? So that's how Airbnb works, right? It's supposed to maintain that balance.
No pit stains, people. No pit stains.
No pit stains. I do honestly think just calling yourself the Airbnb of whatever is the marketing strategy to get venture capital. It's a great idea.
No, it's an excellent idea. And $12 million, I'm impressed.
I'm impressed.
Pengrad.
I'm going to start the Airbnb of, I don't know, radio microphones, children's toys.
Yeah, puzzles.
Ramen noodles.
I mean,
it's an Airbnb of ramen noodles. How does it work? Who cares? It's the Airbnb of ramen noodles.
You get those noodles back. I eat two, three noodles. I give them back to you.
Doesn't matter how it works. It's called the Airbnb of ramen noodles. And therefore, the venture capital will roll in. No, honestly, I actually think it's a good idea. People do have just like too much clothing in general.
Yeah. And there's a way to, yeah.
And people already do like informal clothing swaps and stuff on like Facebook Marketplace. So this is just codifying an idea that's out there.
There are apps now where you can rent shoes, you know, sneakers. People who are sneakerheads, you can rent those. I think that can get a little funky too. Like people putting their, because, you know, do you wear socks? Do you not wear socks? Like, what's going on with
sneakers
that?
Sneakers might be where I draw the line, Joe, right? Even me, and I'm not easily grossed out. Look, yeah. In a sense, you rent a governor mm-hmm. for 4 years when yeah, you elect you him or her. We want to know which candidate for New Jersey governor do you support? And what is the most pressing issue facing the next governor of New Jersey? We ask because the primary election is just a week away. Give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org, and we'll be right back with all sorts of good New Jersey political conversation. Stay tuned!
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Folks, it is officially primary season in New Jersey. Early voting opened today in the Garden State, and the primary election is in exactly 1 week.
The big question, who will be the next governor of New Jersey? There are 6 Democrats vying and applying for the job. On the GOP side, it's a 5-man field. And across the nation, politicos will be scouring the results for signs of a shifting electorate.
Lucky for you, we've got a pair of Jersey political oracles with us to discuss this crowded race. Benjamin Dworkin is founding director of the Rowan Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship. Ben, welcome back to Studio 2.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thank you so much.
And Brent Johnson is a political reporter for NJ.com. Brent, so nice to have you here in studio.
Thank you for having me.
And our question for you, our listeners, is this. Which candidate for New Jersey governor do you support? And tell us why. And what is the most pressing issue you see facing the next governor? The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And for those of you watching on YouTube, be sure to leave those comments in the live chat. And I wanted to start this conversation by talking about this race. It's been bubbling up. It's getting national attention. But I want you to sort of answer this question. What makes this year's gubernatorial primary in New Jersey different from past races? And Brent, we'll start with you.
Well, it's an open seat, meaning Governor Murphy, the Democrat who currently holds the seat, can't run for a third term under the state constitution. So you'll have a new governor no matter who wins. And New Jersey holds off-year elections, so it's coming off the first year of Donald Trump's new presidency. So it's kind of seen as a barometer, a litmus test on the beginning of the Trump term. So, as you said, scouring for clues, people are going to be looking for what does this mean for the midterms next year, the congressional midterms. So there's a lot to pay attention to, new governor and the Trump factor.
Yeah, and then my follow-up question to you, Ben, is this. I mean, people have talked about how in the presidential that New Jersey sort of leaned right a bit. Can you explain the political landscape of the vote, of the electorate in New Jersey, just so folks really understand?
Yeah, New Jersey in federal elections has become a very, very blue state and solid Democratic in federal elections. We haven't elected a Republican to the United States Senate since 1972.
No.
And for the last number of elections, presidential elections, it's been solidly blue. Now, what happened in 2024 is that your typical 14 to 16 point win by a Democrat running for president turned into a 6-point win. And so coming on the heels of the 2021 election for governor, where Phil Murphy won re-election, but won by about 3%.
Yeah, not by a lot.
Not by a lot. Republicans are energized. They're saying, oh, this is the sign of a shift. Now, every election has its own dynamics, has its own characters and its own issues. So we're going to have to keep looking to this election in come November to kind of see a broader thing. But that's why Republicans are excited about this race. And when it comes to gubernatorial elections in New Jersey, the state is decidedly more purple.
Yeah, it seems to go every 8 years or so.
Yeah, boop, boop, yeah. Boop, boop, you know, it switches back and forth, and that's a real challenge to the Democrats who have had 8 years in Trenton, Murphy, being with Phil Murphy being the governor, and now they're asking for a third term. That can be tough in a place like New Jersey, which has tended not to go that way. At the same time, you got a place where Donald Trump has run three times in New Jersey and has lost every time.
Yeah.
And so
that's
coming
hovering.
On, as Ren said, you know, coming on the heels of the first year, this is anybody who's really upset with what's going on in
this
Washington now. This is your chance to send a message to Washington.
Yep.
So those two factors are going to be competing as we head into November.
Well, you said every race has its own characters and dynamics. Let's get into some of them. It's very, very crowded. So I think over the course of the hour, we will touch on everyone. But let's start with front runners or perceived front runners. On the Republican side, Brent, it seems pretty clear who the front runner is. Give us the details there.
So right now, Jack Cittarelli, he's a former state lawmaker, a member of the state assembly, who's run three straight times for governor, lost the first two. Lost the primary the first time, and then he's the one who almost unseated Phil Murphy in 2021, came within 3 percentage points. And now he's running for a third time. So he's had a decade of building up name recognition in a state where your top politicians are household names, but maybe not members of the legislatures. But now he's been going around asking, shaking people's hands, asking for their votes for
just a lot of babies.
Years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he, that's one thing going for him. And then on top of that, Donald Trump has endorsed him, which in the GOP primary is a very big deal. Even though Cittarelli years ago called him a charlatan and criticized him heavily, but he's kind of come around on Trump over the last few years, and now he's
people are
embracing
comparing
him.
It to the J.D. Vance arc.
Yeah, he's like the J.D. Vance,
a big sort of Trump opponent, skeptic. Who's now got that big, warm Trump embrace.
Yes.
Do you feel like that's a sort of a fair comparison?
Yeah, it's fair. He himself has compared himself to J.D. Vance, being the J.D. Vance of New Jersey, and said that, you know, he's criticized the president in the past, but he's come to see what a good job he's done in office and embraced his policies. And that's going to help him in the primary. But the question is, does that become an albatross in the general election? Yeah.
And now let's shift over to the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. I think figuring out who the front runner is a lot more difficult, but some polling suggests that maybe one person is rising to the top. Who do people generally think, Brent, is the front runner on the Dem side?
On that side, it's U.S. Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill. She is led in most polls, but not by a ton. Some people call her like a slight or soft front runner. But behind her are five candidates who also have a path. You ask a lot of people, and they're like, anything could really happen in this race. It's likely going to be Sherrill, but don't be surprised if Raz Baraka, the Newark mayor, or Jersey City mayor Stephen Phillip, or even former state Senate president Steve Sweeney. Then there's also the teaching union president Sean Spiller and U.S. Congressman Josh Gottheimer, that all of them have it. You just need to get like 22% of the vote to sneak in. So the Democratic, we're not really used to this in New Jersey. This is this type of Democratic primary being this close.
Yeah,
usually,
can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah.
And I just want to say for folks who don't know, Sherrill is a U.S. rep since 2018, former prosecutor, Navy helicopter pilot. She's from the northern part of the state. But you said we haven't seen this dynamic a lot before. So typically, do we see sort of the races narrow a little bit before a primary day, or like the party leaders kind of pick and choose? And
Exactly.
Ahead.
The big thing that happened here was for decades, there was something known as the county line in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And that is where party bosses or party leaders picked their preferred primary candidate, gave them the choice place on the ballot, and they would be favored to win. It's how Phil Murphy got all the county endorsements in 2017. Easily won the primary, and it's been that way for years. Critics long said it stifled democracy and made it difficult for anyone to win a primary who wasn't the front runner. But Andy Kim, the U.S. senator, sued to challenge it, got thrown out in court, and so now we have a lineless primary. So basically, kind of evens the playing field. And Sherrill would have run away with this if she had the line.
Because she's got the backing of most of the county party leaders, right?
And so the thing is, there's no line now. Does that mean Sherrill might not win? This is like a litmus test for this.
I want to read this comment from Paige, who says, for Democrats, something to think about. Baraka and Phillip would lose so many moderates in the general. Gottheimer and Sweeney would lose so many progressives in the general. Spiller isn't winning the primary. Mikey is the pragmatic choice. And when we aren't pragmatic, we get screwed. That was a comment
Paige.
That both of us looked at. We were like, what?
That's
so can
comment.
You explain sort of like the, because we talked about the dynamics of the New Jersey electorate and Brent here so talked about how this is really a toss up for the first time for Democrats. How do folks thinking about this race with so many choices before them?
Well, first of all, we should understand there is a leader, Mikey Sherrill, Congresswoman Sherrill, has been for the last 8 months the only one at the top of every poll. Okay. No internal poll. No one who does, oh, this is my private poll. No one has been able to say, we're tied with Mikey Sherrill. And they would if they could. And they haven't. She is the leader. The person who's been in number two has moved around a little bit between Spiller, then Baraka, then Mayor Baraka, currently Mayor Phillip. But the fact is, Mikey Sherrill has been the head. So even though everybody has a very plausible path to win, it's not impossible. You can pitch somebody and say, look, I can win this thing. She's the head.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people are heading into this last week expecting her. There are, how do you choose? We should understand we're looking at 20% turnout among Democrats. You know, we're talking about 550,000 people casting ballots statewide in this Democratic primary. On the Republican side, just by comparison, we're looking at about 350,000 people showing up. So when you have 550,000 people, you've got six very talented candidates. That's where this race is really different from previous years, just to augment what Brent was talking about. Because we haven't seen top-tier talent. We've had five or six people running, but usually there were people you never heard of, people who never quite got the
running
support
just to
or money.
Or maybe to get their name out there, but not serious contenders.
And even with the public financing that we have in New Jersey for gubernatorial elections, which is something we do, you can get a certain amount of money, and then every dollar thereafter gets matched by $2 from the state treasury. Even with that, we've had multiple candidates who couldn't do that.
Yep.
That's not the case here.
They're all raising
money. Everybody is raising money. Even the one person who's not doing public financing, Sean Spiller, has a super PAC, effectively the New Jersey Education Association super PAC, of which he's the president, that has poured in $20 million or more. Actually, it's probably closer to $30 million at this point. So everybody's trying to get their message out. It's a low turnout election, and therefore everybody figures when there's fewer people running, I've got a chance.
Yep.
Get my
it
people organized to do
show.
It. What's really so what has happened? How are people, getting back to your original question, how are people making decisions with this? Obviously, they're seeing the ads on TV and getting a lot of direct mail. There's plenty of social media promotion. Each of these candidates has their own lane.
Yeah, because they're
talking
about the lanes.
Yeah, they're all
the
talking
issues,
about
the yeah.
And so it's sometimes it's issues and sometimes it's persona.
Yeah.
So we'll start with somebody like Steve Sweeney from South Jersey. Mm-hmm. All five other candidates who are running on the Democratic side are north of I-195.
Yep.
Yep.
And so
his lane is I'm not.
I am not. It's South Jersey's Steve Sweeney. Yep. Because 22% of the vote comes from South Jersey. And if you can maximize that while it's all being split
up north,
then you've got a real chance.
And for folks who don't remember Steve Sweeney, he's a longtime state Senate president, had a shock defeat to Ed Doerr somewhat recently.
Truck driver, yeah.
And like you said, the only major candidate from South Jersey. He's 65 years old. I think he's the oldest candidate on the Dem side in this race, if I have my...
Yes,
that's correct.
That's
true. Yeah.
But 65 is not old anymore. We got presidents who are way older than that.
That's interesting thing that I kind of noted, like, I think Murphy was 60 when first elected.
Yeah.
Most of the Dems are younger than that. Yeah. So, like, this feels like maybe a springboard election for whoever wins. I mean, Phillip, 48 years old, mayor of Jersey City since 2013, has this kind of wonkish reputation, it seems. Stephen Phillip, Brent, you can introduce us to him. What's his potential lane here?
Yeah, he is running the anti-boss, anti-establishment campaign. Mm-hmm. Andy Kim last year won the U.S. Senate race largely by running an anti-establishment campaign, taking down the line. Governor Phil Murphy's wife, First Lady Tammy Murphy, ran against him originally. He filed that lawsuit to say that it was unfair, that she was, you know, parlaying her support of the party bosses into the nomination. So he is running in a similar sense in that lane, trying to get progressives, young voters. He's very online, as they say. He's always on social media. He just joined TikTok. So he's trying to galvanize that kind of support. He's a young mayor of a hip, young New Jersey city. So.
Can I add one thing on that? What was interesting with the Phillip lane, he's now going as the reformer, is that he didn't start that way. He wanted to be the progressive in the race. Mayor Baraka got in, and you weren't going to be more progressive than Mayor Baraka.
So should we talk about him real quick?
So he switched to a lane that has actually benefited him. He's doing pretty well with the anti-organization reform the party lane.
Yeah, and I wanted to follow up to that because is that what voters are looking for? Are they anti? Because I noticed that Mikey Sherrill is also sort of like a changing of the guard. I wrote that in my notes. She seems to be a changing of the guard candidate. It's time to, you know, get the younger candidates in office. And so is that sort of like the vibe here of some of the top runners in that on the Democratic side?
Yeah, you can say it's in an atmosphere where machine politics and corruption is not very popular. It's a new kind of politics. Yeah, that can be a very attractive lane, especially in a primary where your base voters are the really loyal Democrats and Republicans who are going to come out and have those kind of issues. So it's not a risk to run in that lane. The question is whether Baraka and Phillip are going to cancel each other right. out and give mm-hmm. more a better path for Sherrill to win.
Yeah. Let's talk about Roz Baraka.
Yeah, we're going to get to Roz Baraka in a second. Just want to know what candidate you are supporting mm-hmm. for New Jersey governor. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Or if you're on YouTube like Judy, drop a comment right there. Judy says she is choosing between Steve Phillip and Sean Spiller. Mm. Baraka, 56 years old, mayor of Newark for the past decade, former educator. I got this pull quote from him when he appeared on the Breakfast Club program saying, "I'm a real progressive. I'm not just playing one on TV." Mm. What's the case for Baraka, Ben?
Baraka clearly is able to mobilize significant urban voters, particularly voters of color. He would be, we've never had a black American as a governor.
Governor of New Jersey.
I mean, Sherrill is trying to do the same thing. We've never had a female Democrat governor. Yep. We had a Republican once. So he's trying to, that's his lane. And one of the things he said, another quote from Baraka, he came down to Rowan University where I teach, and he said, "Look, I might not win, but this race is going to be different because I'm in it." Mm-hmm. And that has been the truest thing there. There are a lot of, I think that is something we have seen. He has raised issues about equity. He has raised issues about people of meager means and what they really need from state government. And those issues, had he not been in the race, might not have been as addressed as well. Hmm. So he has, you know, he's speaking to issues that I think are resonating with people. The question is really, are there enough voters to carry him over?
Yeah. I want to ask, because that goes to the issues, because affordability has been a really big issue with New Jerseyans. And so I want to, you know, how is this resonating? Which candidates sort of stand out, have the strongest message when it comes to these types of issues? And who do you think, Ben, stands out on the Democratic side versus the Republican side when it comes to that issue?
Well, the way to think about the Democratic side is like you're watching an old time circus. There are two rings. And in each ring, something's going on at the same time. On one ring, they're talking about affordability. And this has been Josh Gottheimer's, Congressman Gottheimer's major theme. It certainly has been Steve Sweeney's theme. The other issue for Democrats is the other ring, which is all about standing up to Trump, the fighter who is going to stand up to Trump. And everybody's throwing the word fighter into their literature and their ads. So
Gottheimer literally has an ad where it's like him AI boxing
yes,
Donald Trump.
Right. And so, look, we all started talking about it.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Like, lots of political observers laughed at the ad and sort of thought it was ridiculous. But everybody started talking about yep. it, which is, in a crowded campaign, what you want. So these two issues, affordability and standing up to Trump, are simultaneously the top issues for Democrats right now. Some people are emphasizing one or more at a given time. The successful candidate is going to be somebody who can have a foot in both worlds.
Yeah, I want to mention Congressman Josh Gottheimer represents part of Bergen, Passaic and Sussex County. He defeated a longtime Republican incumbent for his seat in 2016. He's seen as a moderate Democrat. Is that correct?
He is. He's a co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus in Washington, which is a group of an equal number of Democrats and Republicans get together to try and find issues that they can mm-hmm. push forward as a block of voters. So he is seen as a moderate. But again, moderate in terms of today's Democratic Party, which is pretty liberal in and of itself. So for New Jersey, he might be considered a moderate, but I think in a lot of places in Washington, people still see him as a liberal. A Northeast liberal.
Yeah. And by the way, just 50 years old, and mm-hmm. my God, has he raised a lot
yeah.
of money, which mm-hmm. helps with those AI ads, I suppose. John from Willingboro left us a comment. The biggest issue is how to revise the state budget with declining federal revenue. The second issue is how to create slash attract more livable wage jobs and businesses. I think the only Democratic candidate we haven't really discussed yet in detail is Sean Spiller, mm-hmm. also just 50 years old. He is the president of NJEA, the New Jersey Education Association, the state's main teachers union. He has major, capital M major, backing from his union, a progressive background, used to be the mayor of Montclair. Let's talk about him, Brent Johnson. I mean, his candidacy in some ways mm-hmm. is the most interesting. I can't mm-hmm. recall someone basically running on the war chest of a single organization like this before. And his background in politics before being head of the teachers union is, there's a background, but it's somewhat modest compared to like U.S. rep.
Yes.
I mean, let's dissect his candidacy. It's fascinating to me, Sean Spiller.
He is a former mayor of Montclair, which is a very big New York City suburb, considered one of the more progressive places in New Jersey. He's the president of the state's largest teachers union, which is a very big political power player. They helped fund Governor Murphy's first campaign. They fought strongly with Chris Christie when he was governor. And so I guess Chris Christie joked recently that I guess the next step was getting their president to become the governor.
Yeah.
He's not really raising any money on his own. He has these tens of millions of dollars all coming from the teachers union. And it depends who you talk to. Some teachers say we're going to get our guy in the state house and he's going to help us, you know, get what teachers need and what working class teachers need.
Yeah.
And then others are saying, you're using my union dues to run for governor. I'm not very happy about that.
Yeah. But it's so fascinating as an investment, as a bet for a union to sort of like pick one of their own and boost them in this
with
way.
Tens of millions of dollars.
It just seems like quite a gamble for a union to take. I mean, the potential to really pay off or really, really backfire.
Yes, that's the question. Will this backfire one day? And I'm guessing it won't, because the NJEA has long been a strong supporter of whoever wins the Democratic nomination and the governorship. But yeah, it's an unusual campaign. We wrote a whole story about it, me and my colleague Riley Yates, about how this is unprecedented in many ways.
Wow. Well, I want to remind people of our question for the day. Which candidate for New Jersey governor do you support? What is the most pressing issue you see facing the next governor? The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the live chat. Domi R says, Gottheimer and Sherrill both bought and sold Tesla stock since Trump took office. Spiller had a controversy with money and Montclair. Sweeney is part of the South Jersey Democratic machine. No to all of them.
Leaves, I guess, Fulop and Baraka still on Domi's potential ballot. So, and we were talking about that. A lot of more progressive voters could be basically choosing between those two. And I guess Spiller's also in that world as well. Is that a fair way to look at it?
You hear insiders tell me all the time that Sherrill, part of the reason she is the front runner is she has all the support and she has a good resume. But she also has her own lane that she seems to be having. And Baraka and Fulop are fighting over theirs.
Yeah.
So the question is there enough momentum for either of them to go past Sherrill?
Well, look, we've got to talk a little bit more about the Republican race, even though there is a firm front runner. So we'll get to that on the other side of this break. Also want to reiterate that you can give us a call. You can email us. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. We want to know, which candidate for New Jersey governor do you support and why? And what's the most pressing issue facing the next governor? Also on the other side of this break, let's talk about a couple of events that might have not been earthquakes in this race, but things that have shaken up the field or the prognosis a little bit. So that's all coming on the other side of this break. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY, talking Jersey politics. Don't go anywhere. And Welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Before we go back to our discussion about the New Jersey primary, we have a big announcement. It's huge. It's huge.
Beginning next week, we will be live on Mondays.
Mondays!
In addition to our Tuesday through Thursday lineup, yes, we are adding one more hour a week of our show right here on WHYY and our YouTube live stream. Ben Dworkin is pumping his fist over there.
Yes, I saw some jazz hands too. I had to do it. It is Monday, June 9th, less than a week away. So mark your calendars to join us for our very first Monday show. And then, of course, every Monday at noon after that. I'm excited.
Quick aside, Monday is low-key one of the most confusingly spelled words in the English language.
Really? I did not know that.
Well, why is it M-O-N?
Mon. It should be Monday.
It literally, yeah, M-U-N. It rhymes with Sunday, which is S-U-N. I would love answers on that. When we start to air on Mondays, I'm going to start asking some tough questions about Monday. But let's return now to our conversation about the governor's race in New Jersey. It takes place on a Tuesday, next Tuesday, by the way. Hotly contested, very expensive election, crowded fields for both parties. So we're going to talk about the candidates, the issues, the money, President Trump's influence. We've got Ben Dworkin, founding director of the Rowan Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship with us, along with Brent Johnson, political reporter for NJ.com and the Star Ledger. Teased this already before the break. We mentioned that Jack Cittarelli looks like the clear front runner on the GOP side, but there are a couple other candidates in this race who at least have some name recognition and, you know, crazier things have happened type of candidacies. Could you introduce us to those two gentlemen, Brent?
Yes. His closest rival is a former radio host named Bill Spadia. He was the morning drive host on New Jersey 101.5, which is New Jersey's largest radio station. So he had a built-in audience.
Yeah, a lot of people know him.
Yeah, very conservative, MAGA-styled campaign he's running. And the other candidate of note is State Senator John Bramnick, who is a longtime lawmaker in Trenton. Also, he moonlights as a stand-up comic.
Yeah, that was an interesting little side hustle.
And not a joke. Like, he literally goes to comedy clubs and has a comedy routine.
I've funny?
Seen it many times. Yeah, he's especially for a lawmaker and a lawyer. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
He's like a personal injury lawyer and a comedian. I was like, well, this is an interesting combination. Very Jersey.
Yeah, he's not Larry David, but you know, he's not like a used car salesman, I guess. But he's a more moderate traditional Republican who's more willing to criticize Trump.
Yeah.
So he hasn't made a lot of waves in the primary, because in the primary you tend to have very Trump loyal voters.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to ask you about Trump. I mean, you know, how is he faring among, you know, Republican voters? And then how do you think, you know, his presence will impact the actual general in November?
Those are the big dichotomy, because in the primary, polls have shown that he's very popular among the base voters, the people who actually vote in a primary. And that, so you have to run this race first, which is part of the reason people think Cittarelli went after his endorsement, because, you know, you have to win the race in front of you. Question is, even despite last year's election where Trump helped make the state more purple, is that still the case now? Polls, though, the last poll by Emerson University did show that Trump is even water. He's at 47%, which is the highest he's ever been. And he's actually
in New Jersey,
a point ahead of where Governor Murphy is after 8 years. So the question is, this is going to be a dual election in the general election. Do people want 4 more years after 8 years of Murphy of a Democrat? Or do, you know, is Trump, you know, is he the X factor here and he's going to prevent a Republican from winning? That's really the question.
Do you have anything to add on that, Ben?
Yeah, look, it's the theory behind John Bramnick, the state senator, 18 years in Trenton. The theory behind his candidacy was, if there are two more conservative people, they'll split that vote and he can come in with 40% while they took a 60 and each got 30. It hasn't really worked out that way, in large part because President Trump is doing better in a blue state like New Jersey than a lot of people expected, to be at 47-47. 47 approval, 47 disapprove of him is not what we typically expect from a state like New Jersey. You expect him to be much more unpopular. And I think Democrats are counting on him to be much more unpopular by the time we hit the fall election season. So there was a path for Spadia, but it really hasn't emerged. And the one other thing is that the endorsement, the Trump endorsement of Jack Cettarelli, I think had as much to do with the likelihood of Jack Cettarelli winning. You know, Donald Trump is any number of things, but one of the things that when he gives his endorsement, he wants to give it to someone who's going to win. And Cettarelli was ahead by, you know, by double digits in every poll.
And there's reporting, by the way, that he regrets endorsing Doug Mastriano in the 2022 governor's race here in Pennsylvania because a lot of people thought Mastriano did not have a chance to beat Shapiro, and in fact, he got crushed. And there has subsequently been some reporting that he looked at that and said, like, I don't want to pick losers anymore, essentially.
It's about winning for him. And so what I think the fact is that generally people understand to win in the primary, you need the support. You cannot thumb your nose at all the MAGA people that are out there. And it's a good time to be a Republican right now. I mean, if people are popular, they continue. The Democrats used to have a 1 million vote registration advantage over. There were 1 million more registered Democrats than registered Republicans in the state. And over the last 3 years, that's dropped to 800,000. Now, 800,000 is still a lot. There is a whole lot more registered Democrats. And in a hyper-partisan kind of political world, that makes a difference. But it's not nearly, I mean, Republicans are picking up steam.
So are those 200,000 former Democrats, are they independents now? Are they sort of, are they attracted to the Republicans? Or are they just, you know, fed up by the Democrats? That's the question.
I think it's less that people switch, that new people registered, or if they were registered, they now registered with a party, and more people are registering as Republican than the Democrats are building up new numbers.
And that's, I think, one of the big macro questions looming over this entire race is what is happening to the political landscape in New Jersey? And I will extend that to the neighboring state of New York, because those two states shifted more toward Trump in 2024 than I believe any other states in the union. And of course, they are bordering states. They seem to have some political similarities. The types of Republicans and independents they have might be somewhat similar. And I'll put that to you, Brent. I mean, is there something happening under the surface in New Jersey that suggests a true purpling? Or is it just, you know, the idiosyncrasies of each particular election cycle playing out?
It's funny. My editor, Tom Martello, always joked that New Jersey was a swing state for many decades until the 90s. How, you know, for a while it was looked at as a barometer for the country. And maybe we've had a bit of a course correction since then. But, I mean, Democrats really gained in registration at the beginning of Trump's term. Our congressional delegation went very blue after Trump got elected the first time. So there was a lot of Trump backlash. You have to wonder, has just the country gotten more used to Donald Trump? Has the area gotten more used to Donald Trump? And it's just a different world now? I mean, there's a lot of factors at play here. But I still don't think the state is a red state or even going towards a red state. Purple is definitely a pretty good description. And this election is going to say a lot about that. If a Democrat can beat the historical trends, the last time a one party won three governor's elections in a row in New Jersey was 1961, which for context is 3 years before the Beatles even appeared on Ed Sullivan. So, you know, are Democrats going to break that trend? That's the question, because it favors Republicans if you look at history.
And I wonder, you know, Ben, if we think about it, how are people feeling about Murphy, such that do they look at Democrats as any of these candidates are simply an extension of the current administration? Are they seeing them as individuals? You know, how do folks sort of view it? Do they want to turn the page on like the whole Murphy era?
I think in terms of Phil Murphy himself as an outgoing governor, voters tend to be a little bit ambivalent right now. I don't think they particularly care. They don't hate the guy.
But they're ready to move on.
In large part, I think those who are focused on it are ready to move on. And the other thing that we should understand is that Democrats have been in control for the last 8 years of all levers of power.
Government,
is, they've been in control of the state assembly and the state senate for over 20 years. And so once you combine that with a Democratic governor, people don't think of it as Murphy. They think of it as the Democrats in Trenton, to the degree they think about it at all. Most of them are just trying to think about how do I pay and afford living in New Jersey. Affordability is clearly the issue. So to the degree a Democrat's going to win a third term, it's going to be not by saying, oh, I'm going to keep things going the way they are, but there's definitely a need for reform, but definitely a need for change. But you can do it as a Democrat.
Yeah.
And whichever Democrat, if Mikey Sherrill pulls this off and is the nominee come November, that's going to be part of her message.
We've been asking folks who you plan to vote for, or maybe you've already voted for. Keith on YouTube says, Bill Spadia all day for me. Judith from Collingswood says, as a senior female activist, I already voted for Mikey Sherrill because not only is she very qualified, but we need more women who have the necessary traits to get things done without being nasty or cruel. Have there been big inflection points, you think, so far in this race, Brent? Things that happened, expected or unexpected, that maybe shook up the balance a little bit? Could you identify a moment or two?
The two I think of, one on the Republican side, it's Trump's endorsement. Because there was a behind-the-scenes battle for many months of Chitterelli's people and Spadia's people both trying to get that endorsement. And for Chitterelli, there was even a thought, well, maybe if Trump stays out, that's even better. Because I won't be tied to him in the general election, and Spadia won't get the nomination or won't get the endorsement. So that was the big thing. He got in, and now Chitterelli's tied to Trump. The other thing was Raz Braca, the Newark mayor, got arrested outside of an ICE detention facility in his city a few weeks ago, which brought him all kinds of attention. He was all over the national talk shows, and I even co-wrote a column about how does this mean Braca is now the favorite for the Democratic nomination. It's been so changing this election that it seemed like that at the time. Now we don't know. So those were the two big, because that drew him a lot of attention. And it also drew attention to the primary being so focused on Trump, the Democratic primary. So those are the two things I could really point to. I'm sure there were others, but those are the two.
And by the way, I believe those charges have been dropped in the Baraka case. Just wanted to note that.
Yeah, I wanted to sort of get a little bit of the understanding, Ben, of how the Democrats are looking at Trump. I know there's this fight Trump, but... you know, are they willing to work with him? What are the differences between how they plan to treat this Trump administration, especially since one of our stories from earlier today was, look, sanctuary status could mean you lose federal funding and all those things. There's a lot of issues that could be pulling on the purse strings that New Jersey relies on.
Yeah, look, New Jersey receives billions of dollars, multiple billions of dollars from the federal government. And I think all of the folks, once they get into office, should they be lucky enough and awarded the seat, are going to have to deal with, I want to stand up to Trump when it's necessary. At the same time, there's $1.2 billion coming for education, and there's $12 to $14 billion coming for Medicaid, and we can't lose that. And so they'll stand up against, say, this Republican budget that is being going through the process in Washington there. What was the inflection points, as you just talked about? You know, and Brent's right, the arrest. Look, he's standing up to Trump.
Yeah.
I think he already had those voters. You know, I'm not sure it's getting you new people. It gets you new friends in Georgetown, not necessarily votes in Jersey. And so that's it's going to be a balancing act. I think every governor has to go through that.
Just want to note that Mayor Raz Braca just filed a lawsuit today against the interim U.S. attorney for New Jersey, arguing that his arrest was motivated by political malice, not justice. So just that quick update from our producers. Real quick, before we get out of here, looking at the wedge issues among the Democrats, the Immigrant Trust Act seems to come up over and over again. Real quick, Brent, what is that, and how are people differing on their endorsement of it or their non-endorsement of it?
When Phil Murphy came into office, he said he would even make New Jersey a sanctuary state. And how that manifested itself was his attorney general at the time, Gerbier Graywall, put an order in place that said it limited how much local police can cooperate with ICE on immigration detention. And it's been, for the last 8 years, it's been the law of the land in New Jersey, or the ordinance on file. And basically lawmakers have proposed something to make that into state law where it becomes permanent, codified. And it hasn't passed yet. It hasn't gone to the governor's desk. And the Democratic, all the Republican candidates are against it. And the Democratic candidates, depends on who you talk to. Mikey Sherrill said she doesn't think it would hold up in court. Steve Sweeney said he would undo that policy. Baraka, Phillips, Spiller have all said that they would keep it in place. I think Gottheimer also has an issue with it, Yep. But yeah, so yep. it's split because immigration is a tough topic for the Democratic mm-hmm. Party. A lot of people, regardless of party, think that there need to be stronger policies.
And real quick, because if you're still listening, you're a New Jersey political yes. nerd at this point. Ben Dworkin, as we wrap up, any other races you're keeping your eye on real quick outside the big one we've been talking about all hour?
Yeah. Again, as we talked about before, there's no line. There's no preferred ballot yep. position awarded anymore. So all these people are being grouped together. This has everyone who wanted to run for state legislature. Yep. The state assembly, 80 seats are all up. You have incumbents and you have any number of challengers. Some Democrats are going to keep control of the state assembly. Mm-hmm. There are 52 out of 80 seats now. They're going to stay in control.
But I think what you're generally looking for is, the insurgent, non-party-backed yeah. candidates so fare a little better just across the board in these
You're
going to
see yeah. a couple upsets there, I expect, in District 37, which is up in Bergen County, the northeast corner, right outside New York City. Incumbents might have a difficult time there.
Interesting. District 37, keep our eye on it. Thank you so much for joining us on Studio 2. Ben Dworkin, founding director of the Rowan Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship, and Brent Johnson, political reporter for NJ.com and the Star Ledger. You guys are great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know. I feel a little bit smarter when it comes to New Jersey politics, thanks to you guys.
I want to drive right over that bridge right now.
Thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2, here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you tomorrow.